Some folks I used to know, used to smile and say hello, spin the world and turn the page, entertaining from the stage. But Father Time, forever true, loves its own, and me and you disappear just like the sun when the day is done. The world is falling down. It's a lonely sound. Hold my hand. We'll follow the breeze and go like the wind and look for a place where the wind blows been. World is falling down. Hold my hand.
Abby Lincoln, Aminata Moseka, with The World is Falling Down. It's the title track from her 1990 album, arranged by bassist Ron Carter. And Lincoln is accompanied by Clark Terry on trumpet and flugelhorn, Jackie McLean on alto sax, Alain Jean-Marie on piano, Charlie Hayden on bass, and Billy Higgins on drums. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. And indeed, it seems like the world is falling down. I cannot believe this weekend and the previous week. My gosh, what's next? It seems that Donald Trump and his never-ending boorish brand of advisors, well, it's kind to call them that, are on a mission, some kind of mission, to drag us all to idiot hell. I don't understand what is going on, and I don't understand whether we could withstand it continuing much longer, in which case I think the recently concluded G20 summit, which left many world leaders bewildered, is a warning, a second warning. We've had one of these before. The G20 nations of the world are usually okay, and they have their own little problems, and they've had to wrestle with that, but this just took it to a whole other level. And maybe I'm making much more of it than need be, but I think, I mean, for me personally, I've just had it. I've had it with this, with what we have to settle for in terms of political leadership. It is so insane. It is embarrassing. It is really non-essential. And it is a kind of joke. It's a big joke. As you know, this was a meeting of the G20 nations. Did I say seven? I meant 20. And they deal with issues of the world as heads of state. And they wrestle with this and they wrestle with that while they wrestle with problems ongoing in their respective countries. But when you have a meeting of heads of state, you tend to set aside, you know, the troubles and the problems that you have with different states. If you're having such problems that you don't see why you should be in the company of these states or why these states should be in your company, you resolve that before the meeting. You don't get to a meeting and then we start hearing and seeing ripples of discontent. But this is applying, in my view, this applies specifically to the United States. And I don't know why Donald Trump and his so-called advisors don't get the basics of how you relate to foreign countries in an international atmosphere. You show all your ugliness and your incompetence. Now, Trump decided this was a good opportunity, a good time to take along not only his wife, because that's expected, the heads of state and their wives or their spouses. They tend to show up as a team. Great, get that. But everywhere Trump goes, it is getting nauseating. Some member, some unqualified member of his family is now participating intimately in the goings-on. You know, it's like you want to have a nice dinner, and in your head, you're planning, let's say, for six to eight people, right? And you know all of them. And you are being very, very careful to get everything just right. And the couples come in and they start, you know, you start a little aperitif or you, some kind of a warm up to the meal. And through the door come two people you don't even have a clue why they're there, how they got there, who brought them there, and how, the worst part is, how do you throw them out? You don't know why they're in your house. And then comes the secondary fight, which is, and you've seen this, I've seen this many times with my parents. My father had this terrible habit of always slamming my mother with uninvited guests. And he was really happy about it. It's like, oh, look, we have so many people in the house. Isn't that great? Yeah, well, from the look of my mother's face, it never was great. Of course, she was gracious and, you know, we handled the situation. But it is annoying. And at another level, it's very inconsiderate and disrespectful. Because you may have a plan that you just want to have a good time. But your wanting to have a good time never extends to, well, let me get busy and help you out so that we both look good. You know, my father just would say, Gertrude, you know, organize something. Organize something? You know, I intensely dislike that. There are times when you can do that when it's a casual affair and, you know, you don't care. The more the merrier, you just drop by. And we're all having a good time. But when we are all clear that this is a thing being organized for a specific group of people, and then it looks like anybody should come in, you're on fire. At least I am. I'm on fire. I ain't talking to anybody for at least 6 months. I can't stand it. And here, you know, diplomacy is a very, very important skill. There are rules, there are regulations on how people operate in that world. So, heads of state are expected now to exchange ideas and words and thoughts with other heads of state. And President Xi of China obviously was expecting to talk with his counterpart, President Trump. And that didn't happen. Instead, Trump says that he has to run off to the side and have some quick chats. And who shows up as a substitute teacher? Placement.
What we already knew, Barry, that the President of the United States has a particular skill set, that he's identified an illness in Western democracies, but he has no cure for it and seems intent on exploiting it. And we've also learned that he has no desire and no capacity to lead the world. The G20 became the G19 as it ended. On the Paris Climate Accords, the US was left isolated and friendless. But given that that was always going to happen, a deft president would have found an issue around which he could rally most of the leaders. And he had the perfect one, North Korea's missile tests. So where was the G20 statement condemning North Korea, which would have put pressure on China and Russia? Other leaders expected it. They were prepared to back it, but it never came. There's a tendency among some hopeful souls to confuse the speeches written for Trump with the thoughts of the man himself. He did make some interesting scripted observations in Poland about defending the values of the West, and he's in a unique position. He's the one man who has the power to do something about it. But it's the unscripted Trump that's real, a man who barks out bile in 140 characters, who wastes his precious days as president at war with the West's institutions like the judiciary, independent government agencies, and the free press. He was an uneasy, lonely, awkward figure at this gathering, and you got the strong sense that some of the leaders are trying to find the best way to work around him. Donald Trump's a man who craves power because it burnishes his celebrity. To be constantly talking and talked about is all that really matters, and there is no value placed on the meaning of words, so what's said one day can be discarded the next. So what did we learn? We learned that Donald Trump has pressed fast forward on the decline of the United States as a global leader. He managed to isolate his nation, to confuse and alienate his allies, and to diminish America. He will cede that power to China and Russia, two authoritarian states that will forge a very different set of rules for the 21st century. Some will cheer the decline of America, but I think we'll miss it when it's gone. And that's the biggest threat to the values of the West, which he claims to hold so dear.
Well, that was Australian reporter Chris Ullman talking about Trump and his the perceived conduct at this summit meeting. And I agree. I've talked about these same points as well, but it is a very sad thing and a very dangerous thing that they're not seeing the importance of reining this guy in. Maybe he's beyond control. Maybe that's the problem. He does not know how to behave, and therefore he portrays a rather unpleasant attitude with respect to how he represents the United States. Okay, so you have a particular point of view, and that is what really is exciting about meetings like this. You have people with strong positions. You have people who have particular points of view, and they come together, and to some degree, we are able to observe their interaction with each other, and we also extend some kind of hope that despite their differences, they could see the higher purpose of meetings like this, and that is meetings like this provide an opportunity to get beyond, maybe not significantly beyond, but to get beyond in some measure on key issues. Trump gets there and then it's all about Trump. No. It's the gathering of heads of state. Whether your state has 400 million people or you have a state, a smaller state with a few million people, they're all in the same room. One assumes that at the very basis of things, you respect the presence of everybody. But every time Donald Trump is in a milieu where one of the things that you show as a head of state is a sensitivity to the presence of all the people, and you work hard at being an equal. Even if you don't think these other people are your equals, the fact is they're there because they've been voted in as equals. But he always, I mean, it is the signal of a ruffian, a thug. He comes in, and no matter where he is, the entire environment becomes his. And everybody must reshape whatever it is they're there, as, you know, they agreed to be there for, and pay homage to the absolute monarch, the king of kings. So he diverts the purpose of the meeting or the ceremony or whatever it is they're there for. He diverts the intention to him, which is very, very rude. But beyond that, it is deeply troubling on a psychological level that under no circumstances can you allow a little bit of space for other people. It's all about you. You're sucking up all the oxygen in the room. And when you think you have had enough, when you have accomplished a mission of one sort or another, you find a reason to make a dramatic exit. You bring in your daughter. I mean, this is just so insulting. Who doesn't have a clue? Who is totally unqualified? And who you arbitrarily place as an equal with the president of China. It's like, yeah, well, I'm done with you. Here, talk to this guy. I'll be back. It's like, what cave did you come out of? And what is this deal about pushing your family? Because we are all now, as Americans, we are to look not only at Donald Trump, but his empire and the representatives of his empire. And we should trust that they know what they're doing. If they knew what they were doing, he wouldn't be doing what he's doing. Embarrassing the nation before the world. And this is not an extraordinary demand. This is par for the course in diplomacy at this level. You ought to know that. You're talking to people like, well, yes, of course, you know, and you're hemming and hawing as if, well, you've been at this for a long time. And the nation should not object that you, President Trump, arbitrarily decide that you should change the rules. Nobody is sufficiently well-versed in diplomacy or just plain manners. Okay, this is, set aside diplomacy, this is plain manners. There's nobody to check the crudeness of these people's behavior. They act like they just crawled out of a cave someplace and landed in a room with a bunch of very highly connected people, and they're acting as if, well, we're equals. Since when is Ivanka Trump the equal of anybody in that room? Or one of the other sons who they seem to be in agreement that they should run the world. And they're starting here. And we're not hearing from the apparatus that we recognize as something of an authority here to say, you know what? We can't do this. You can't do this. And you can't do this starting now. To my mind, it smacks of nepotism. And to my mind, they put the world's agenda, they managed to subsume the world's agenda, the world's issues, and superseded that with their own agenda. You know, somebody wants a real estate deal here, somebody wants to sell shoes and make shoes at a cheaper price in China. Somebody just likes the idea of rubbing shoulders so that when I call you next week, you will recall that we sat next to each other at this event, and we'll arrange for me to come see you in your country and have a nice little chat about what I want to do. Now, it might have slipped the royalties, his and her majesty, it might have slipped them that their very presence there is a problem. Why? They were supposed to shelve their own personal interests so as to comply with U.S. law pertaining to conflict of interest. They were supposed to give up and put all the money that they have, all the business interests that they have. They were supposed to, by now, they should have done it, in fact, within the first week. They were supposed to put everything in a situation where their money and their business practices do not conflict with longstanding U.S. practices. They were supposed to put that in a special account, and they were supposed to have nothing to do with it, hand it over. They were supposed to put it in trust. These folks are continuing to do business and expanding their horizons. We had Jared's sister going over to China, or going overseas in Asia somewhere, offering a great plan, a great investment plan. And of course, it's on the surface, it's a real estate deal. But if you spend X amount of dollars, we can get you automatically qualified because my brother is the presidential senior advisor. And we could expedite your visa for permanent status in the United States. What the heck is going on here? And it is at events like these, where people are mixing and mingling, that you see them trail off to a corner of the room and they're talking business, straight business, under cover of official duty. You see? And this is happening right in our faces. I'm not hearing from Congress that it is time to stop it or to fire these people. Now, this is why I believe that Donald Trump is having some trouble. For one thing, he doesn't trust people very easily, and those he trusts tend to be those within his family. But his deficiencies, his mental deficiencies, should not hobble this nation. He should go someplace and have it looked at, get treatment, take some meds. But he cannot, in my view, be trusted to continue to operate this way, using the apparatus of government, the power of the state, to continue to do business. He had been warned before. You cannot mix your business and the people's business. What is he doing? Every day he does it. His children, who I believe have the capacity to understand English, are saying to the United States, the people of the United States, and to the world, we make our own rules. From day one, they all were supposed to have put whatever money they have made so far in a blind trust. They swore to that even. They promised, yes, we'll do that. Well, it's month 7. And it seems that their business dealings are more vigorous than before. And they are intimately integrated and involved in the business of the state, meaning they have access to secret and top secret and whatever else they have in terms of classification of secrecy. They have access to power. They are power. Trump is now sending signals that he's getting bored with this business of the presidency. Why? Because there are too many rules. He's accustomed to waking up in the morning and deciding, yeah, this is what I'm going to do, and that's it. Well, that's not really it. He's not accustomed to being reined in and being accountable to anybody, as are they all. So we have ongoing nepotism here. These people haven't been vetted. Jared Kushner, whose father is a felon, served time in federal prison for bribery and related crimes. Well, what if being vetted included an investigation of his father? Are his father's crimes shared by him? What kinds of business do they have together? where, and this is important, where are they getting the money to build these buildings, some of which have them in hock? What did he have to do to qualify for these loans? Where are these loans coming from? He was exempted from that vetting process, and yet he occupies a very intimate position in the Trump administration. Ivanka Trump is married to Jared Kushner. Well, that's fine and dandy. Except they have a great deal of business entwined with each other. So she gets a pass, a free pass. You don't have to explain your possible shenanigans to the people like anybody else who is appointed to a very sensitive position, but she is a senior advisor. Her husband is a senior advisor. You just got out of college, probably barely. We haven't seen your grades, so there's no need for me to automatically trust that you know what the hell you're doing. We know that you are privileged and uniquely so. And so you have been exempted already, showing favoritism. The other brother, who is yet another advisor. This president has so many advisors, and yet it doesn't look like he knows what he's doing. They're taking care of their business and utilizing these covers that they're being provided so generously by their father and father-in-law. I don't know if you recall me saying, as it relates to the world of real estate, Donald Trump vowed to drain the swamp. The first swamp in the United States is real estate. So you know how genuinely you ought to believe when a person who comes out of that swamp is threatening to drain it. Come on. Are you joking? I'm supposed to believe you? Money, real estate, swamp. It's all the same. It's all entangled. And yet, to this day, 6 months in, none of these so-called advisors have been vetted by anybody. Yet they have access to confidential information. They're talking to people they shouldn't be talking to. They have information they shouldn't have. And, you know, they use the resources of the state as if it belongs to them. I mean, the US-1 airplane is officially a cab, taking everybody all over the place. It's a cab service. And the thing that gets me is this solid feeling of entitlement. We do this because we can. We got it like that. Now shut up. And they export now the contempt that they have for their own people, their own American people. They're now exporting it to other countries that kind of step back and say, what the hell is this? Where do these people come from? I mean, there have been clips I've seen of Donald Trump and others of his ilk eating. They don't even know what fork to use. they don't even know how to dress properly. All right. In the level of society that they should be very comfortable in, they look like the Clampets. Oh, yeah, they wear designer this and designer that. But they have not, these are not well-schooled people. These are primitive people, driven by just two things, money and power. They come back home and nobody says, well, wait a minute, what the heck did you guys just do over there? Let's get on with the business of vetting your team. There are questions that should be asked of each member of the team and of the advisors who are on board, who all seem to have thriving businesses that are aided and abetted by contacts with foreign people, many of them in government. So this is why I say all the time, I look on politics as a kind of a swill, a pool, just this bunch of swill. Nobody, practically nobody, is flying straight. But they all have the power, it seems, to compel us to, quote, fly straight. They're hiding from paying taxes here. As I said, they just get out of jail. They're felons, breaking the law left, right, and center. They don't care. They have no regard for the law. That's for ordinary people. Or as Leona Helmsley, the queen of real estate in New York, used to say, that's for the little people. That's not for us. We make our own laws. We do our own thing. And if we do wrong, all we have to do is hire lawyers, pay, you know, throw them some extra hundreds of thousands of dollars to just make an accommodation with the government, and life goes on. This is their reasoning. This is how they do it. But we saw this weekend, blatantly, a total disregard for just the basics of diplomacy. The United States continues to look stupid, just plain stupid and arrogant. And that attitude, it shouldn't be lost on any of us, that attitude has trickled down throughout all the layers of government. And we have a bunch of beastly people running this country. They're just beastly. You look at it and tell me I'm wrong. Your education secretary wants to just beat up and pulverize poor people. You're not entitled to the kind of education that my children are entitled to, and I'll see to it. You have a Secretary of Housing who, in matters of housing, is as dumb as a box of rocks. And who so far, 6 months in, has not been allowed to function independently of that sick system. He is a doctor. He should be able to fix that because it's all mental. Instead, he makes outrageous statements about blacks coming to this country. The first immigrants, among the first immigrants, were blacks too. They came perhaps at the bottom of a ship, but they were immigrants too. You know, there's no question that something went wrong there in his mind. You may be a great brain surgeon, but you need to undergo brain surgery. Your brain ain't right. Everywhere in this administration, you see how overpopulated it is with people who have these kinds of defects, mental defects. In just a basic way, they see people and life. And it has nothing to do with because this is happening because they're wealthy. It has to do with the fact that this is who they are. They're beastly people. And now through Trump, they have an opportunity to almost customize the punishment they wish to dole out. I wouldn't want to be seen in the company of these kinds of people. They're very Christian, you know. Oh, yes, you got to watch out for the very Christian people. They tend to say things like, well, the slaves, of course, they worked hard and they knew that they were going to make a lot of money, but they held on to the hope that someday they will do so. And people with doctorates and all these kinds of degrees talk like this. PhD just means piled high and deep. That's all it means. So here we are again, back at the circle, the never-ending circle of Donald Trump as President of the United States, and what he has managed in 7 months to do. And what he has managed to do in 7 months is derail the processes that really are essential for democracy. He's going to decide alone what he wants to do. He has a bit of a problem differentiating what the form of government is exercised here. He does not have final say. He does not have the authority to order people to do this and order people to do that. And he does not have himself the wherewithal to encourage that kind of discussion with him in the middle, like everybody else, trying to find a solution. He does not know how to, despite the fact that he claims, you know, to be the world's greatest negotiator. He doesn't even understand what that means. Negotiating means you do it exactly as I say. And he knows everything. So we are in grave danger. We have an intentionally ignorant president and his offspring and good friends who have been firmly and strategically ensconced in particular positions in his administration. And together they are an embarrassment to this country. We should be ashamed that these are the people running things, and we are letting them. So I'll take a break now and hear your thoughts right after this. listening to Lead Stories on PRN.fm. I'm Eutrice Lead. What are you thinking about what I just said? It disturbed me all week, all weekend. Up until this morning, I realized I have to call a friend of mine and apologize for offloading that we find ourselves in this position as a great world leader of a country, and we seem to be unable to solve this problem. And to me, it requires the Congress understanding that they are the power of this country and they ought to do something about it. But cowardice reigns supreme in Washington, D.C. Nobody wants to do what is necessary to do, what is long overdue. And so we go back and forth, covering the same ground. Patricia, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, Eutrice, and good afternoon to the PRN family.
Good afternoon to you.
This is a continuation, I think, of Thursday's discussion about his mental health. There was a picture floating over the internet over the weekend, and during a break at the G20 meeting, there was a picture of Trump literally sitting in the middle of the room by himself, isolated. It was almost akin to, you know, a kid on the playground who's in the sandbox all by himself watching the kids on the playground just having a wonderful time and wondering why somebody won't come and play with me. And that picture was absolutely telling. And again, the whole concept of nepotism, unfortunately, he's not isolated in this. Hillary has done the same thing, although maybe not to the same degree. And if you notice, there's not a peep out of the Democrats. I think there was an issue where the whole question of Jared Kushner's ability to have some secret clearance, Secret Service clearance. One of the Democrats, Cory Booker, said that, it wasn't time to do that, and he opposed that. So, we're really going to just have to wait and see how this is going to play out. We really don't have any recourse at this particular point because the checks and balance that's supposed to be there on behalf of the Democrats is very, very silent.
I agree with that. But I think it will occur to them because people are getting more and more fed up of this Hollywoodization of the White House and the Congress. They want action and they want sincere commitment to improve things and work with other nations to improve things for everybody. It's not going to be perfect, but with this group, it's not going to happen. I don't see it happening.
You're absolutely correct, which is why I am dumbfounded at the absolute silence of the Democrats. I am just absolutely dumbfounded.
Well, starting tomorrow, there ought to be some interesting stories floating around, including on this program. Thanks a lot for calling in. Habu from Wisconsin, you're on the air.
Yes. Yes, hello, good afternoon, and thank you for the opportunity, and greetings to you and your audience.
Thank you, and I'm glad that you are joining us today.
Thank you very much. I'll be rather pithy, and this is what I think.
It's pithy, okay.
I'm not at all taken in by what Trump is doing. It doesn't even catch my attention. What he is doing is what the United States has always been doing, and even worse, going and bombing Iraq, Libya, and all these Syria and all this. And what is happening right now is, as somebody put it, Trump is a total fraud, and he is exposing the ugly underbelly of America, the United States. He is, and without any hesitation or shame or anything, he's doing it in open. And I hope he slaps some of those vessels, states, leaders in Western Europe around, you know. They kind of have been playing along all this time, and they want to give us the impression that they are, you know, high and mighty with their nobility and all this. They're no better. They're the same. It's the same thing. And so what I see Trump doing is I'm rejoicing inside so that, you know, the world's outrage just grows and grows and grows. So that's where I stand on this. This thing is not putting me off at all. I mean, Hillary and all were doing this, even Obama in other way, in other slick ways, but nothing compares to this Twitter troll. But they were all doing this. It was almost, you know, it was a velvet hand covering a steel hand, you know, iron hand, iron grip. So what we see now is it's almost like the U.S. has reached the end of the rope. Now it has to do things openly and avoid all semblances of decency and diplomacy.
Well, that was the point being made by the reporter, Chris Ullman. He said that Trump may not have realized it, and it's hard to figure that he may not have realized it, that the world's nations just simply walked away. They walked away from him and left him there. This was the point Patricia was making. If that doesn't signal to this administration and to the president and his so-called advisors that people have already begun to react to him, and the way they're reacting is abandoning any kind of substantive link with this administration and with this country. And that's unfortunate.
Well, you know, even though I don't support the U.S. Foreign policies and wars, I can't say that I've not been the recipient of the booty or the loot that the United States, you know, gathers on the world stage or businesses. So we all as Americans have benefited. So, but even so, I'm against it because that's not the correct thing to do. But with this person in the White House, it's the gloves are off, and you know he acts in this boorish way, as you said, and he is exposing what a fraud America really is. You know, Obama was a little too slick for that. Plus, he got the pass because of the color of his skin, and Bush was just wasn't communicating, and Bill Clinton was too smart apparently. So, you know, now we have seen the emperor, and he has no clothes.
Hey, that's a pretty good line right there. The emperor still has no clothes. Thank you for calling in, Havu. Good to hear from you. Michael from New Jersey, you're on the air.
Hi, Utrice, and hi to the PRN audience, our friends.
You have only a short time today, but we
okay.
can certainly
I just want to add a few divergent colors to the painting that we're showing here. I disagree a little bit. I agree with the isolationism, the nepotism, but I don't think that the mental health issue is one that is going to be. I think it's a red herring in some sense because they don't want to fight the political fight, and they can't win a political fight, so they're putting it in a different direction. You know, they're giving it to the experts on mental health. Who's mentally healthy? And then you're gonna you know, have the expert against the expert. But really, it's a political fight that they can't win. They can't, because Obama has deteriorated our freedoms and to such a degree that there's no clothes on the other side either. And they can't fight a political fight, so they're trying to fight a different kind of fight. And I question that. But the nepotism, the isolation, I mean, and as far as the manners go and that kind of thing, I mean, in Elizabethan England imperialism, they had the highest manners of the Englishmen, but they were brutalizing people in Africa and in India and around the world. So manners doesn't, and that kind of diplomacy doesn't really you know, amount to fair policies and practices.
But there was no need, really. There was no need to have diplomacy back in those days. There was just expectation. We're
right.
coming to take your country.
It was a brutality. I mean, they were
right.
very civilized, you know. They wore nice clothes and had they had the highest manners, and they paid such attention to details of manners and civility. But they were uncivilized. They were primitive, more so
and
than ever.
Mentally ill. And don't forget, they were crazy.
They were crazy.
They were crazy. Their idea was that crazy as we are, we're entitled to do these things to you, and your job is simply to accept it.
Well, yes.
We have to leave it there today, but I do wish we could continue this discussion because we really have to look at this squarely in the face. Stay tuned. Coming up next, Meditations and Molotovs with Vincent Emanuele. You can reach me at leadstories@gmail.com. And as always, a pleasure and a great, great privilege to be in your company. A good program coming your way tomorrow. Not that this isn't, but you will want to tune in. I guarantee. Bye-bye.
The world is falling down.